And 7 minutes past 1 o'clock, it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman on this Wednesday afternoon. We're at your service today, and we examine the South Florida real estate picture with an update from a panel of professionals. We'll be taking your calls, emails, and tweets as well. First, it's Anthony Burns. He's a principal in the DevStar Group, Miami Beach. Thank you very much for coming on, Mr. Burns.
Thank you.
Also, we have Gary Fitzgerald, Vice President of Real Estate Lending of City National Bank of Florida. Welcome to you, Mr. Fitzgerald.
Thank you.
And also in the studio is Linda Fernandez. She represents the Miami Association of Realtors. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
And we'll begin with you, Linda. Why have the price of rentals increased so dramatically? Is it demand versus supply?
Absolutely. Basic supply and demand. We have very limited housing at the moment. We have a housing shortage, whether it's rentals or homes for sale, and that's driving prices.
There are many new condos going up now. Could it be another breakable bubble, though?
Well, I think that, you know, as long as there's the available capital, developers, and some speculation, there's always a potential for another bubble. But I think we're very early in the cycle right now. And I think this time the financing structures are significantly different than from what they were in the past.
How do they differ?
Yeah.
the projects today are being largely buyer financed. You know, there's a lot of Latin American buyers, and they're putting down anywhere from 40 to 60% deposits. In the last cycle, you were looking at more like 20% deposits. So there's a very significant commitment on the part of the buyer, which reduces the risk for the lender. You know, today your typical loan to value is going to be in the loan to cost in the 20 to 30% range, whereas at the last cycle you were looking at loan to cost in the 75 to 80% range.
If the interest rates were to rise, which may happen, what will that mean for home buyers and home sellers and homeowners who want to refinance?
Well, I think we're already seeing it. There's been a significant drop off in refinancing activity, even though rates are still by historical levels very low. Mm-hmm. But, it's been difficult to get financing coming out of the last cycle. A lot of potential buyers' credit was damaged during the last cycle. And it's certainly going to reduce the number of refinancings.
And what about the housing market in general if the interest rates were to rise?
Well, you know, I think it's certainly going to have some impact, some negative impact on the housing market. But I think we're so early in the recovery still that we're going to see growth in the housing market, and we're already experiencing it.
And Anthony Burns, your take on the condo situation. You're very much involved with the Marina Palms development. Tell us more.
Well, our specific project's located up in North Miami Beach, obviously being part of Northern Dade, which has seen somewhat less development than we're seeing down in the urban core. But just at a macro level within South Florida, I think what you're seeing drive this this rapid recovery has to do with the fact that a tremendous amount of Latin American money is coming into the market. This is something that the market and developers and lenders saw in the last cycle, but given the fact that South Florida has so many positive dynamics, it continues to attract this capital. It has, it's a great place to live. It offers a safe haven for many of these people that want to expatriate their money, whether it be because they want to live a lifestyle here in South Florida, or it's because they want to have a safe haven if anything goes wrong in their home countries,
right,
from an economic, political standpoint. That gives them comfort. So while we have yet to see a major recovery from North American and Northeastern and Canadian buyers into South Florida, the number of South American, Latin American buyers continues to be very strong and is really continuing to push what we're seeing as this as a very strong recovery here.
We're speaking about the South Florida real estate market today. If you'd like to join in the conversation, the number to call is 1-800-743-9576. It's 1-800-743-9576. You can email radio at WLRN.org, or you can tweet us, and that's at Topical Currents. What about foreclosures? Are they steadily declining? Whoever wants to take that.
I'll jump on that one. What we're seeing is really a tale of two cities. The units that are in the projects housing markets east of I-95 really showing the most recovery. Foreclosures are down, prices are up. There is a supply demand inequity there, and that's why you're seeing the pricing go up as we're seeing. However, if you look at many of the markets that are west of the I-95 corridor, that's where you're seeing the market continue to demonstrate some of the characteristics of the rest of the country. Modest improvements, but you're not seeing a rapid recovery in pricing and demand.
Do you request higher down payments from foreign investors than, say, someone, a native person?
We don't. As a matter of principle, we require the same deposit structures regardless of their nationality or where they're coming from.
So the situation for those on the low end of the income scale has not improved dramatically like it has for those on the higher end?
I think I wouldn't necessarily characterize it as the low or high end of the market. I think where it more... there is some correlation, I think, to that, but what really is driving is the location. There's a lot of the Latin American money that's coming. They want to be close to the water. They want to be either on the ocean or waterfront, and it's much more constricted from a supply standpoint. Although we're bounded by the Everglades to the west, there's a lot of land west of 95, and there's not nearly as much east of 95.
Linda Fernandez, give us some stats on sales in both Miami-Dade and Broward and property values and
sales.
The increases.
Well, we've seen sales increase. They started increasing in 2008, which was probably the height of the market for inventory. We had 46,000 listings on the market at that point, existing listings. I'm not discussing new construction. This is just existing properties. And currently, we have about 11,000 active listings on the market in Miami-Dade County, and we've seen the same thing in Broward County, mirrored, not the same number, but the same percentages. The last 2 years, 2011 and 2012, we had record sales years that exceeded even the height of the last boom. And we've been seeing rising prices for nearly 2 years for condos and for 20 months for single family homes. And we're actually seeing, regarding foreclosures and short sales, a decrease or a balancing off of sales for distressed properties while the traditional sales are increasing dramatically. Double-digit increases for sales and also for median sales prices.
What effect would a really devastating hurricane season have on these gains?
Well, it would definitely affect sales. I remember in 2006, I think it was, when we had the hurricanes back-to-back. I think it was Katrina. I can't remember the other one. That's when we started seeing sales level off. So I think it would have an impact, but right now the market has great momentum. There's great demand. We're the top market for international buyers. And also, I just wanted to add about the cash sales. We are, nationally, cash sales account for about 27% of the market. In Miami, it's 60% of the market, and it has been since 2009 when we started tracking it. And for international buyers, cash sales are even higher. They're close to 90%. So a bubble like last time would be highly unlikely.
What's the market like for first-time home buyers?
For first-time home buyers, we are seeing less properties available in the lower price points. There's still a lot of demand for those properties. We're hoping that the mortgage underwriting policies or standards are less stringent and gives those homeowners better opportunities.
Gary Fitzgerald, what kind of down payment would, say, a young first-time home-buying couple would be expected to put down?
Well, you know, if they can get into one of the government programs, you can look as low as 3 to 5% they can put down.
In down payment. 3 to 5%.
Yeah. And a lot of first-time home buyers use those government-sponsored programs to help them buy their first home.
Do they still make people take out property insurance mortgage?
If your down payment's less than 20%, typically they require PMI.
Until you pay down the principal
until you pay down the principal, correct.
And where does residential lending stand in your bank compared to, let's say, a year or 2 years ago?
Well, a year or 2 years ago, I think that there wasn't a whole lot of residential lending taking place. The banks were dealing with some open wounds from the last cycle. Those wounds are beginning to clear now. And, you know, we are looking very positively at the near-term residential market. And we're seeing more and more and making more and more loans on residential properties.
We're speaking about the South Florida real estate picture with Anthony Burns. He's a principal in the DevStar Group. We have Gary Fitzgerald, Vice President of Real Estate Lending from City National Bank of Florida, and Linda Fernandez from the Miami Association of Realtors. On today's Topical Currents, we're going to take a short break. We'll come back and take your calls and your emails.
And it is today's Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper along with Bonnie Berman, and we have a panel of real estate professionals with us. If you'd like to join in with a comment or a question, 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN. Also email, if you're a little shy, that's radio@WLRN.org. And also Twitter, that's @TopicalCurrents. First caller, this is Renee in Hialeah. Hi there.
Gentlemen, hello. I have a quick question. One, yes, foreign investors are coming in. They are buying properties. They are buying them cash, but they're not spending the money here as you would go and buy something at Publix or activities for children. So, indeed, that seems to me that consumption is kind of false. Also, the second problem is that I see regarding this particular possible bubble is that the banks are not really letting go all the inventories that they do have, but yet the banks are willing to lend out monies to create new properties. So indeed, what are we really creating at the end of the day for us?
Who'd like to take that one?
I can answer. Go ahead.
I'll take a shot at the first question in terms of, you know, immediate consumption. To a certain extent, you're right. Here in the near term, these projects that are all currently being sold in the pre-sale market, many of them will not come to fruition for the next 2 years while they're being built. However, I think what we are seeing is there is some immediate consumption in terms of the numerous construction-related positions that are being created in the economy. If one thing is actually of concern to developers is the shortage of construction labor in the South Florida market due to the number of projects going on. And so the fact that these South Americans or international buyers are not necessarily here today living in the condos that they're purchasing, the monies that they're using to deposit, which then spur the additional lending, is having an immediate impact in the economy through the construction trades and all the suppliers down the supply chain for the construction and eventual delivery of these buildings.
Of course, there's no homestead exemption for them, so they're paying a little higher taxes.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. That's correct.
And what was the second part of the question? Oh.
He's not on
the line.
Banks
releasing foreclosures.
About what?
Banks releasing foreclosures.
Oh, yes, that they were.
Inventory.
Yes.
Yeah, I do think banks have been slow, not intentionally, to release the inventory back into the market, but actually I think that's helped stabilize some things because everybody's expecting the big dump of properties on the market, which I don't think has really occurred. They've come on in a much more systematic way, and I think that's helped stabilize things as we've moved into this period of recovery. But I can tell you the banks are far healthier today than they have been in a long time. They're far more interested in lending today. And we believe it's a very good time to be lending in the residential sector, even though, yes, we're creating some more inventory, but we believe the demand's there.
What about someone who still has a home that's underwater, meaning they owe more than the property is valued? So that should they just try and hang on and have that property value increase?
Well, property values have been increasing, and the question is, can they hang on? You know, I think most of the, and I'm speaking predominantly about what I see at my institution, but I think most of the short sales, we've already worked our way through those. I know there's a lot out there, but again, property values are recovering, and they're recovering at a fairly rapid pace, certainly in certain areas. And I think that if you can hold on, there's a chance that your property's going to be worth more 6 months from now than it is today.
Linda, why does it seem that condos and townhouses are making more gains than single-family dwellings?
I think it's because the sales started surging for condominiums before they did for single-family homes. But we're now seeing double-digit appreciation and strong sales for single-family homes as well. And I just wanted to add that the that there's great demand for foreclosure for REOs when they come on the market. And so we would see at one point they were selling 7 times faster than they were coming on the market. So there's great demand for that price point and type of property.
And I read in your figures, it said that single family homes surged in Miami-Dade with the highest number of monthly sales in July since the height of the boom in 2005.
That is correct. We hadn't seen for single family homes. We had for condos, but not for single family homes since I think the beginning of the last boom.
Mm-hmm.
What about some families who really had a difficult financial times during the big recession and perhaps ran their credit card debt up? Would this be a time to refinance and pay off high interest debts that you owe?
Yeah, the answer is yes, if you can qualify today. And it, you know, if you have credit that was damaged from the past.
Or do remodeling upgrades?
Yeah, it's more and more difficult to qualify, but certainly, again, now would be a good time to do it.
If somebody was damaged, if they had to do a short sale or whatever, what does it take for them to recoup their credit?
The process for recouping is not one I'm familiar with, and I think it's changing all the time. I know the government is looking at various aspects of this, and they're trying to make it easier for mm-hmm. buyers who've had credit difficulties in the past to borrow again in the future. But as far as where we are in that process,
Linda, you were going to add something?
I was just going to say that it also depends on, for the short sales, it depends on the institution. And I know that there was a letter sent to lenders about a week ago, I think it was for FHA, where they have to go, for those who had a foreclosure or a bankruptcy, they have to go through some counseling, but that they are able to buy again, buying again if they've recovered financially. So I think steps are being taken, you know, in that way, and that those individuals who were damaged in the last downturn will be able to buy again. Mm.
With this great increase in property values, obviously the tax base is increasing. I know you have nothing to do with the county, but would you expect some ease of the burdens of taxpayers? Or is that a foregone conclusion that it won't happen? Your guess.
Well, it seems as the it back in the last cycle, as the property tax revenue was rising, they found a way to spend the money. You know, then it dropped, and now it's coming back. And I don't know that you're going to see any relief. I think they'll put that money to work somewhere, somehow.
We have an emailer, KT. My husband and I have been living in our house for 13 years and have always paid our mortgage on time. Recently, we were turned down by our original lender in the pre-qualification stage. Because we're both self-employed, we're now in the same situation we've always been in, yet now we can't get a loan.
Well, I mean, that's one of the stories that you hear far too often, quite candidly, is that people who have paid their mortgage and done the right things, they're being impacted by the problems, in the marketplace and the problems that other buyers have had.
And that many buyers in the past have been speculating lost their shirts.
So there's always some good people to do the right thing that unfortunately get impacted after a downturn like that.
Let's go back to our callers. Next up, this is Robert in Miami. Hi.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a foreclosure defense lawyer. My practice is in Miami-Dade County. And I listen to your show all the time, but I'm taking a little bit aback, and it causes me some pause when I hear even now, the last commentary saying, well, people doing the right thing. Well, what about the bad things that the banks did throughout the entire origination process from 2001 to 2005 and took advantage of this whole bubble? I don't agree with your guest in terms of them telling or saying that the banks are releasing their lines or their properties as soon as they get them in, or they're trying to control them. They're actually using the courthouse and allowing cases to languish inside the court in the courthouse, to not put it on their books in order not to go ahead and inundate the market with so much supply, which of course would bring down the market value again. I had an opportunity to speak to one of the plaintiff lawyers for Wells Fargo Bank, as a matter of fact, and he told me that he's getting more cases than ever now through his doors in terms of bringing new foreclosure action. Hmm. I think it's naive to think that we're actually on a total rebound with this. I think that we're in danger of another bubble, and the lenders, the tight regulations and the standards that they have for underwriting are just beyond belief. Clients of mine are not qualifying. I used to also practice real estate.
Well, we have a banker, Mr. Fernandez, here. How would you respond to that?
Yes, and I believe that Mr. Fernandez spoke to the issue of that there are government programs or they're trying to do something about it, but basically, when clients come to see me, they have great credit, and they try to do a refinance or they try to do a purchase. They tell me unless they give a quart of blood, they're not going to be getting anywhere soon. With respect to the stability in the markets, I'm talking now about just basically neighborhoods. If you have too many foreign investors and you're having them purchase these properties, they're not bringing any stability if they're renting them out. That's another danger that you have with the stabilities in the neighborhoods as to whether or not people are going to go ahead and populate them as a permanent residence or if it's just going to be another investment property. Thank you again for taking my call.
Okay. Thank you, Robert.
Well, the I'm going to admit the foreclosure business is a little out of my area of expertise, and this is someone who deals with it on a daily basis. I think I can only provide my observations about how the banks are handling this. And, you know, were the banks certainly culpable in the last downturn? Absolutely. I don't think there's any doubt that lenders had something to do with it. There were the liar loans, as they used to call them, where there was no verification of income, no verification of deposits, and that drove some false demand. People bought homes they couldn't afford. But again, I think we did agree on one point, which is the banks are releasing the inventory back into the marketplace at what seems to be a sustainable pace. They're not flooding the market with product, which is what everybody predicted, which I think has, in part at least, contributed to the recovery that we're seeing and the growth in prices and the reduction in inventory. I can't speak, obviously, to how many cases are being filed. I simply don't know that aspect or what's coming up.
So if they released too much inventory, then obviously supply and demand, it would cut down the price of housing.
Clearly. And you know, I know that the caller referred to the court system, and I think said the banks are using the court system. Again, not sure I quite understood the point there, but you know, oftentimes you'll talk to lenders, and from their perspective, they're frustrated by how long it takes to get through the foreclosure process in the court system. But again, if there is a big release of inventory, sure, it can have an impact on the supply-demand balance.
We have an emailer, Rick, for residential lending. What is the panel's opinion with the current appraisal requirements, lenders that use appraisal management companies?
Again, the appraisal aspect of the residential market is a little bit out of my area of expertise, but what I will say is that appraisers have been very conservative, starting in about 2010, very conservative with their valuations. And in many cases, their valuations have impacted the ability for people to refinance their homes or to buy a new home because they simply can't get it valued at what the current price is. The appraisals tend to lag the market by maybe 6 months because they're looking at historical data. And that, you know, when a market is in a period where the prices are rising, you have buyers that are ready, willing, and able to pay a certain amount. They just can't get the appraisers to support the value.
Did you want to add something, Anthony?
My only comment had to do, I guess, with the former caller's assertion on the bubble or the risk of a bubble. And I don't, you know, from where I sit, I just don't see a bubble. And there's a number of dynamics in play that I think contribute to the fact we are not in a bubble. One, the lending requirements, which the caller indicated, are much more stringent, which means that only qualified or presumably only qualified buyers are purchasing units. Secondly, from the new development standpoint, the inventory criterias, buyers are putting in a significant amount of deposit money and equity, and they're not financing these. These are people that are very well heeled and have the financial resources to purchase and carry this product. And so these are all the dynamics that are significantly different than the last cycle, in which and lead us to believe that we're certainly nowhere near any type of bubble at this
point. With these high deposits, do they therefore get better interest rates?
Exactly. And to what Linda had mentioned earlier, most of these buyers are cash buyers. They're not buying these with debt. These are relatively high income buyers from international markets that simply pay cash. And when you have a cash buyer, the risk of having a bubble significantly decreases because you have buyers that are vested in their property and aren't going to be able to get foreclosed or have to walk away.
On this information for Marina Palms, it says that buyers are putting 40% to 70% down on a non-refundable basis.
That's correct. That's correct. The buyers, talking particularly with respect to condominiums.
And then they pay the rest when they
when they close. And so the way the current laws are established is that the developers are able to use a certain amount of those deposits to construct the building. That allows us to obtain lower construction loan-to-cost ratios. But most importantly, and what's different in this cycle and last cycle, is these are buyers that are all the more committed to closing on their loans, or rather closing on their condominium units, and which we believe will prevent any type of downturn, massive downturn in the real estate valuations that we saw in 2007, 8, and 9.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, if I might add to that, I think that, again, from a lender's perspective, in the last overbuilding cycle, there was far more speculation than anybody realized. And, you know, what the higher deposit requirement, I think, is going to do, it's going to curb some of that speculation. For example, if you had $300,000 to invest today, you might be able to buy one unit. Whereas in the last cycle, you could buy three units with that same $300,000. Mm. So I think the higher deposit requirement, It makes it easier for lenders to lend, and it also is going to help curb the speculation in the market.
That's a good point.
Again, we're speaking about the South Florida real estate picture with Anthony Burns, Gary Fitzgerald, and Linda Fernandez on today's Topical Currents. Another short break, and we'll return.
You can find Topical Currents on Facebook, a dedicated page with daily program descriptions, links to our guests, authors, and books. Facebook.com/topicalcurrents.
Thirty-six minutes past 1 o'clock. It's today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman and our guests, Anthony Burns, Gary Fitzgerald, and Linda Fernandez. Another caller. This one is JR. JR in Miami. Hi there.
Joseph, first time caller, long time listener. Hello, panel. How's everybody today?
Hi there.
Good. Hello.
Yes. Okay, I got a quick question. I'm a combat veteran, and I'm trying to use my VA. When they look at the VA as the person that's lending the money, do they look at that as less or just as equal as the lender?
Well, again, it's a lender question, but I candidly don't have a lot of expertise in the Veterans Administration lending area, so I don't know if anybody else on the panel does.
Who should he contact?
Well, JR, first of all, thank you for your service. I'm actually also a veteran, and I've used a VA mortgage previously. Typically, the bank originators have the most information. I haven't obtained a loan here in South Florida particularly, but where I did obtain a loan, the local banks typically are well-versed in how the VA programs integrate within their lending operations. But in my experience, there was no difference. It was very turnkey and seamless. Basically, all the VA does is supplement the mortgage insurance that you typically have to pay. So you're allowed to obtain a mortgage at a higher loan to value, but not have to pay the higher costs associated with insuring the difference in that higher loan to value.
Okay. And the next question, between now and next year, at this same time next year, are we looking at the interest rates to go up significantly or not?
Our belief is that they will increase, but if you look at the information that comes from the market called the forward curve, it doesn't indicate that the interest rates are going to increase substantially until over the next 18-month period. What the experts indicate is that, you know, out past 18 months, there's certainly a higher risk of them increasing. But over the next 12 to 18 months, it doesn't look like it should increase more than 25 to 50 basis points.
Okay. And equivalent to interest points, what does that come out to?
Well, that would be between a quarter and a half a point.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your time. I appreciate it. Hoorah.
Thank you.
Good luck to you.
Thomas is looking to move from Fort Lauderdale to Miami to be closer to work, in no hurry, excellent credit, doesn't want a condo with a water view, and his current home is appreciating with the rest of the market. He worries about selling then not finding a new home he can afford. Should he wait until the market balances out, or is time of the essence? Linda?
Well, I think, I mean, prices are still at 2003, 2004 levels since before the last boom. So it's still, generally, it's still a good time to buy. But depending on his price range, the inventory in the lower price ranges is greatly decreasing. So I don't know. It's a tough question because there will be a lot of supply coming on the market starting in 2014. And even though he doesn't want a new construction condo on the water, that impacts the market in general. So I would say it's still a good time to buy depending on the price range. And prices are still affordable compared to what they were during the last boom and compared to other major global cities.
Okay. How are we compared to other global?
We are, for example, less expensive than cities like Bogota and Colombia, Brazil, Argentina, most major capitals in Europe.
How about other American cities?
I looked at an affordability index about a year ago, and we were less expensive than cities in Oregon, Texas, Austin, Texas,
California,
definitely New York. Yeah. Those. So, given the lifestyle and amenities that Miami offers and its position as a real global city, we really are very affordable.
And we'll go to another caller. This is Jerry. He's in Davie. Hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, on any industries, that would consider to be collusion. So if Bank A is releasing a set number of mortgages, the assumption is they must be talking to the other guys, finding out what they are releasing. Otherwise, it wouldn't make any difference. So if Bank of America is releasing 100 houses this month, somehow they must be talking, knowing that what Wells Fargo and the other guys are doing. And that in itself, to me, sounds like collusion and illegal.
Yeah, I wasn't alluding to any collusion among the banks. I was just simply referencing the fact that, you know, the banks realize that prices were going to be rising. And, you know, they've moved their foreclosures through the system as quickly as they could, but they didn't dump product on the market, in my opinion. And by not dumping it on the market all at the same time, I think it's helped in stabilizing what was a really shaky housing market, even if you go back 2 years ago. But as far as the banks working together, you know, there's no evidence that I'm aware of that the banks are trying to control the market as a group. It's just, again, simply an acknowledgement that the market's improving. The market continues to improve. If you have a house that you're foreclosing on today, it's probably likely you're going to get more for it, you know, 6 months from now than you get for it today.
Of course, the past has influenced public opinion quite a bit on some of these matters.
There's no doubt about it. I think that, unfortunately, a lot of individuals are a little bit suspicious about the bank's motives these days. And again, as I mentioned before, the banks certainly have to take some responsibility in what happened in the last downturn. You know, again, if there's too much capital available in the market, it's going to drive speculation. It's going to drive prices artificially high.
We have another emailer, Alan. I've been waiting for a refinance to come through with my lender for 5 months. It has now finally gone to the title company for processing. Is 5 months excessive? I closed the original deal in 07 in 30 days.
Well, from my perspective, yeah, 5 months is excessive. We can turn them around at my institution in 30 days if need be. So that seems like a long time. Again, there was a big backlog of refinancings that moved through the system. But a lot of those refinancings with the rates rising, there's not as much of a pipeline as there used to be. But I would think 5 months is excessive.
Okay.
Is this boom doubly apparent because of how far the values of the houses had fallen and condos?
You know, with regard
to... So would you say a 20% increase, but it took a big backward slide before that.
Well, the percentage increases always look more impressive coming off a bottom of a market. I mean, I think that I personally was surprised by the pace of the recovery. I think in the last cycle, we didn't just oversupply demand. I think we overpriced demand. And I think the rising cost of land, the rising construction costs, and the rampant speculation all drove prices artificially high, where there really wasn't a good value proposition for the buyer. when prices adjusted and came down to a point where there was a good value proposition again, particularly out of Latin America, people started buying. Buyers came back in large numbers.
We have another emailer, Rick. Cash buyers are prevalent in the urban core areas like downtown and Brickell, but not so much in suburban Miami-Dade County. If appraisers are being overly conservative, why don't lender underwriters exercise their power to override conservative valuations?
I would say from a banking perspective, the appraisal segment with regard to lending is the most regulated of segments. We don't have the ability to override an appraiser. It's a very, very regulated process.
And the first part of it, I don't have it now.
Why don't we take a short break and then we'll come back and do some more.
Okay, we're speaking with Anthony Burns. He's a principal in the DevStar Group, Gary Fitzgerald, VP of Real Estate Lending from City National Bank of Florida, and Linda Fernandez from Miami Association of Realtors. We'll come back and take more calls and emails. Stay with us. And welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper here with Bonnie Berman and Anthony Burns from the DevStar Group, Gary Fitzgerald from City National Bank of Florida, and Linda Fernandez from Miami Association of Realtors. And the first part of Rick's email was about that cash buyers are prevalent in the urban core areas, but not so much in suburban Miami-Dade County. Linda, you were going to say something about
that? Well, I was just going to briefly say that it is true that it's more prevalent in the urban core, but it is happening throughout the county, because we have a very high percentage countywide. And we're seeing like baby boomers and, you know, U.S. buyers who have wealth who are buying cash as well.
What are the best values in condos and townhouses to buy in Dade, Broward County?
By best value, you mean the least expensive?
The more house per
for your
dollar.
Buck. Well, it's still away from the urban core and away from the water access. Increasingly, as a society, people are moving towards the urban core and the lifestyle and walkable communities. But beyond that, the international buyers prefer urban core water access. So it's still, you know, whatever's away from the urban core and the water is you're going to get more bang for your buck.
So obviously, with this much foreign investment in the condo market, it's rising, giving higher prices for natives then.
Well, yeah, it's still demand. So yeah, definitely driving prices.
And we'll return to our callers. Next up, we have Sean. He's in Hallandale Beach. Hi there.
Hello, how are you?
Good.
Good. My question is, my parents are elderly. They're in their 80s and their 70s. And my dad is a disabled veteran, 100%, and they get a pretty good income from the government alone with no retirement, meaning that they could have about $5,000 to $6,000 a month. But they're having trouble getting any kind of a loan through VA or anywhere else because of the fact that that they don't really have any money to put down. And because they get hospitalized a lot, unfortunately with medical bills, they're trying to clean up their credit. Is there any advice you give them on how they can be able to get a loan with little or no money down to get a condo in that area?
There's no answers here.
Everybody's... looking puzzled.
Yeah. I'm just, from a general perspective, you have to improve your credit score in this market and have a down payment. But if there are other products available, maybe they just need to do more research and find out what's available to him. Because like Gary mentioned, he could be eligible for some government loan where he doesn't have to put a down payment or it has to be a lower down payment.
Could you have a real estate agent do some of that groundwork and point you the right direction?
Well, I was going to add earlier, when my brother-in-law is a Marine, and when they purchased their home, they had, I think the lender referred them to a realtor who's familiar with the product and dealing with military. So maybe it's contacting a lender to find out how to get the VA loan, and then they put them in touch with a realtor. It specializes in that.
Okay, and do you know where I can get that information? What I need to Google it, or is there any particular website I can go to?
Yeah, I don't have it with me, but I'm sure if you Google it, that you'll be able to find it.
Also, wanted to mention my parents live in a dual building, which they love a lot. And the thing that even if they apply for a VA loan, a lot of the buildings say that we don't accept VA mortgages. Is that true? That when you apply for a VA government loan, does your product inventory decline because? And everybody accepts that type of mortgage?
I mean, I can say I've never heard of a building or a not accepting a government-sponsored mortgage. That would be news to me.
Okay, so technically, if pre-qualified, then should be able to get one. Is that correct?
Should be able to, yeah.
Okay. All right, well, thank you so much for taking my call on. I actually appreciate it.
Okay, thank you for calling. Lauren wants to know, with the advent of boomers, there seems to be no movement in pet policies and buildings. I don't know that you'll have the answer to this, but why is Florida so behind the curve and the best buildings in New York allow large pets? It's from Stacy.
The decision with respect to the pets is determined by the initial developer out of the gate when they establish the condominium documents and file those with the state. So really, in a matter of speaking, that's a function of the market. Our particular project, for example, we have a pet restriction at 65 pounds because we felt that there's no material difference in having a 35-pound limit versus a 65-pound limit, and why restrict that particular breed based on size alone. So really, that's something that's determined by the market, and I think will probably change if there's a sufficient market demand to make it change.
I would say the developers I work with are becoming much more pet aware than maybe they have been in the past. They talk about, the allowing pets being more important than having a pool and a gym these days. People love their pets.
That's good to hear.
And they want to live with their pets. So I think it's happening. Maybe we're a little bit behind New York, as the caller pointed out, but it's coming.
We have Alexandra sent a tweet. Property values continue to increase by double digits, first condos and now homes too, but when will we plateau?
I wish I had a crystal ball that would tell me. I don't have one. I believe we're early in the recovery now, and as I think Joseph mentioned earlier, the statistics can be a little bit misleading in the sense that when you talk about double digit growth, you're coming off of the bottom. And so while we're in a recovery, I think we're early in the recovery.
And of course, we don't know what kind of things could happen. We could have another terrorist attack or something like that, and that would really sincerely affect the market.
There's always the unknown.
In case, this is HM, in case of the federal loan program, how stringent are the rules compared to the conventional loans in terms of approval process? Also, please briefly explain what the federal loan program is compared to the conventional loan.
I know everybody's looking at the banker, but I don't have an answer for that one. Not familiar enough with the residential programs.
And we'll move along to another caller. We're getting very short on time. This is Karen in Miami. Hi there.
Hi. I'm glad you're taking my call. Thank you. I'm just retired from the Miami-Dade County school system, and I was trying to sell my house to move to where my daughter lives. I paid my house off. And I didn't realize until I put it on the market how many houses in my neighborhood, I'm in Kendall, in foreclosure. And the house next door finally went on the auction block, and they put it very, very low, and they've had over 200 people look at it for the past month, and nothing has happened. And others have affected my price because the appraisal of the neighborhood is low, so I removed my house off the market. And I did have two bids for cash. One wanted to turn it into a rental, and I didn't want to do that. As your attorney stated maybe four or five calls before, I wanted to see young families get in here. And I'm very frustrated because I don't know how long I should wait before I should put my house up. How long do you have to wait after a house has already been sold, after it's been in foreclosure? And with three on one street, it really kills me. Mm. And I paid my house off. And it's hurt of those of us that are trying to downsize and move to another area or to move to smaller places. Do you have any opinion to ask, for me to find out how long I should wait after the houses have been sold?
I don't know that you can point to a particular time to wait. I think you're dealing with one of the unfortunate circumstances of the last downturn. Is there still foreclosures, and you happen to have three on your street?
Yes.
I'm surprised that there wasn't more activity. One of the phenomena we've seen is there's been a lot of institutional money pouring in to buy these foreclosures, billion-dollar funds that are coming in to buy them. So to have a foreclosure without a lot of activity surprises me. Now, you're right. It's driving values down. It's driving appraised values down.
Yes.
That's part of the problem with the financing and the selling side. All I can say is, an appraiser is typically going to look at maybe sales that have taken place in the last 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So, if that foreclosure inventory clears, and you have a couple of other sales over the next 6 months, you might find...
Be in better shape.
You might be in better shape, yeah.
Yeah, the house next door, they did something, I don't know if you're aware of this, they did what they call email proposals. So they put it really low, so they had tons of people look at it, placing the house way, way low, even below what most of people are selling for, even that are not in foreclosure, to see if they can get the house to go higher. They're doing this bidding process, and it still hasn't sold. I mean, maybe it has now. I don't know. I mean, there's not as many people, but it's frustrating. And then getting to what the attorney said, I do see a lot of people buying by cash, and then they're renting the houses out. And I agree with him. I don't think it's going to help our neighborhood.
Okay, Karen, good luck. We have to run.
All right. Thank you so much, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling.
You're welcome. Bye.
And we want to thank you, Anthony Burns, a principal in the DevStar Group, for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Also, Gary Fitzgerald, Vice President of Real Estate Lending from City National Bank of Florida. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Linda Fernandez from the Miami Association of Realtors. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
And that wraps up this edition. Apologies to those callers we couldn't get on the air. It was produced by Richard Ive, technical direction by Caroline Brader-Watts. Paul Leary is online producer. We have free audio archives and downloads at our website, WLRN.org, and more information and links at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow's program begins with British philosopher and author Roman Kaczmarek. He has advice on how to find fulfilling work. Also, Linda Gassenheimer's Labor Day Tips with Adam Rappaport, editor-in-chief of Bon Appetit magazine. And our favorite wine guy, Fred Tasker. Now the calendar. On this day in 1837, 176 years ago, John Lee and William Perrins begin making their famous sauce based on fermented anchovies in Worcester, England. But they never envisioned or tasted the Bloody Mary or Chex Mix. And on this day in 1907, 106 years ago, two Seattle teenagers start a local delivery service. It was later renamed the United Parcel Service. And one more, of course, on this day, 1963, 50 years ago, the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom is highlighted by Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech in Washington, D.C. The iconic speech was preceded by Peter, Paul, and Mary singing Bob Dylan's Blowin' in the Wind. We leave with a thought from Martin Luther King, who was actually born with the first name Michael. He was renamed for Martin Luther. Quote from King, "When you are right, you cannot be too radical. When you are wrong, you cannot be too conservative." Joseph Cooper along with Bonnie Berman. Next, lend an ear to the here and now from NPR News.